Where warp meets weft.
Where warp meets weft.
This is Weavecast with Sine Mitchell.
Hello, and welcome to Weavecast. This is episode 53, The Joy of Polyester, with Holly Brackman. This is my first podcast since the summer hiatus, and I just have to say that I am delighted to be back in the studio. It was good to take the time off. I wandered around and had many, many adventures. I taught all over the country. I visited with far-flung family. There were some major projects going on at home. So it was an exciting, busy time, and I really needed the time off. It was the first time in the 4 years that I've been doing the podcast that I took a large chunk of time. And it was good to have that time, and it is great to be back. If you want to know what I was up to over the summer, I wrote a blog post called What I Did Over the Summer, 2010. You can find that on the weavezine.com website under Sine's blog. If you want to get there faster, you can use the search box. Either works. This episode, we've got an interview with Holly Brackman, who is primarily known for her surface design, but she's also a weaving instructor. And we're going to talk to her about doing exciting things with synthetic yarns. Following that, we'll have an audio essay called My New Favorite Yarn, Polyester. Before we get into the interview, I've got a few bits of news. First of all, I've got a word from our sponsor for this episode, which is Bonnie Tarsus. Bonnie is sponsoring this episode in celebration of 50 years of handwoven artistry. She's been weaving for 50 years. Congratulations, Bonnie. When Bonnie heard that the Dalai Lama was coming to Arley, Montana in 2011 to bless the completion of the Garden of 1,000 Buddhas, she decided to visit the garden and weave the Dalai Lama's horoscope on site as a fundraiser to help contribute to the completion of the garden. An unexpected result of the weaving was that Bonnie packed up her looms and is moving back to Missoula, Montana. She is offering a copy of the Dalai Lama's color horoscope winding draft for the special price of $25. To contribute to this exciting project, go to her blog, weavingspirit.blogspot.com, and click on the donation button and enter the dollar amount. All profits will go to support the garden. We'll have a link to that on the show notes. Thank you, Bonnie, for your support. Now I have a plug for one of my own projects. I talked today to Suzanne Peterson, who is one of the organizers of the Madrona Fiber Arts Winter Retreat. If you're not familiar with this, it is a wonderful event that's held in February in Tacoma, Washington. It is just fabulous. I've gone there for many years. This upcoming February, I will be teaching two brand new classes I have never taught anywhere before, and they're ones that I am very excited about. The first one is e-textiles for knitters and weavers. In this class, we'll be learning how to incorporate electronics into a garment. We're going to be working on either a hat if you're a knitter, or a scarf if you're a weaver, and we will actually create an e-textile garment in class. Very exciting. We'll be starting with LEDs and looking at other things. I'm very excited about that class. The next one is a class that I wish I could have taken when I started weaving. It is clothing from the rigid heddle loom. If you have been into rigid heddle weaving and produced scarf after scarf after scarf, and you are done weaving scarves and now want to learn how to make flattering garments that fit you, come take this class. We are going to start with our big piles of fabric that everybody has woven up and learn how to piece together narrow yardage to make wonderful garments. I'll be teaching this class with Selah Barling. She is a professional tailor, and you may have seen her articles up on Weavezine. So if you're going to Madrona in February, please think about these classes. I think they're going to be a very fun time. I'm having a fun little giveaway on the website. I was reading the Yarn Harlot's blog a couple of weeks ago, and she talked about light-up LED pens. This is a pen that can sit by your bedside table, and if you have an idea in the middle of the night, you turn on the pen and it's self-lit, kind of like those knitting needles that self-light. So you can write your idea down in the dark without having to get out of bed. I mean, how cool is that? Immediately after learning that this thing existed, I went and Googled light up LED pen. And I found a website that had a minimum order of 20. Instead of one light up LED pen, I soon had 20. And I have been giving these pens away left, right, and center. And I still have quite a few left. So I'm going to share them with you. Here's how it's going to work. I'm going to have a drawing and I'm going to give away 5 pens to 5 lucky Weavecast listeners or Weavezine readers. All you have to do to enter is go up to my blog, Sign's blog. It's up on the Weavezine site, and leave a comment on the blog post called My New Favorite Yarn, Polyester. It is the complimentary blog post to the audio essay that will follow the interview. I'm here in Tacoma with Holly Brackman, who's just taught a wonderful 5-day workshop on dispersed dyeing and Devoray. It's been just a fabulous time, and I'm so delighted that you could be here with us.
Thank you, Sign.
How did you get involved with the fiber arts?
Well, I guess my original experience was weaving potholders as a child, as many people were introduced to weaving. But I didn't ever think about myself as a weaver until, by chance, I took a weaving class in summer school while I was working on my bachelor's degree. So I took that first class, and I was totally smitten with weaving. I continued to weave through graduate school, although my master's degree was in art history. I took graduate weaving classes as well. Once I started teaching, I continued to learn more and more about weaving and continued to weave and dye.
You've been teaching in an academic setting for many years.
That's right. I retired a little over a year ago from 37 years of teaching at the community college level, art history, weaving, and dyeing.
These days, is weaving your primary focus?
I would say it's very mixed. I have several looms at home, and I weave at home, but I also do surface design. I would say I'm doing a bit more surface design right now than I am doing weaving.
One of the interesting things I got out of this workshop that I was just fortunate enough to take with you is surface design can work together with weaving to make very interesting and creative textiles. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. 10 years ago, I had a sabbatical from teaching, and I decided that one of the goals I would set for myself during that sabbatical was to try to combine more surface design and weaving. It was at that time that I started looking more at embellishments and things that could be done to weaving, as well as looking at structures and how they would relate to more surface techniques. So I started looking more and more at dye techniques and delving into those.
Before we go any farther, we should probably describe some of these terms. Would you explain what Devoray is? Did I say that right?
In Australia and Britain, it is Devoray. And in the United States, it's usually Devoray.
Which do you consider more correct?
Well, I'm an American. I say Devoray.
Okay. Well, would you explain how Devoray works?
Devoray is a burnout in simplest terms. It usually is a burnout of a cellulose. So you are dealing with a weaving that is a composite structure. In other words, you have a cellulose and non-cellulose portion of the weaving. And when the burnout solution is put on the fiber, the cellulose portion is eaten away. Probably something that most people are familiar with are the rayon silk Devoray scarves or garments. There we have the silk, which does not burn out with the solution, but the rayon portion does burn out. So you end up with areas that are more transparent and areas that are more opaque.
And one of the interesting things about being a weaver working with Devoray is that you can build fabrics that make the best use of this technique.
That's right. There are not that many commercial fabrics that can be successfully eaten out by the burnout solution. So weavers have this incredible possibility. They can use yarns that they either spin themselves and combine two different fibers, or you can buy yarns that have a cellulose and non-cellulose portion. And the non-cellulose portion could be polyester, it could be metal, could be silk. So there is a wide range of possibilities.
There's a devaray where your yarn has two different fibers in it and you burn away part of the yarn, but then there's also a devaray where you have two different yarns and you burn away one entire yarn.
That's right. That's right. So you can have a variety of weave structures, anything from plain weave to a very complex 20 shaft or more structure.
One of the things that we looked at in the workshop was structural burnout. Could you describe how that works?
A structural burnout is one in which you eliminate some of the warp and weft yarns. So, for instance, you could weave a 2-2 twill and you alternate warp and weft with cotton polyester alternating in warp and weft, treadle it for a 2-2 twill, and it will burn out to a plain weave. Or by altering the weft order, you could also burn it out to a basket weave.
So it's kind of like this intellectual puzzle where you have your original weave structure, and when you're planning it, you pretend to remove threads and see what other weave structures you could potentially make.
That's right.
And then design the type of fibers.
That's right. We looked also in class at an 8-shaft crepe weave, and that could be burned out to a 2-2 twill, a basket weave, and other structures.
Who came up with this interesting technique?
The person that introduced it to me was Joy Buttrup, who is a textile engineer from Denmark. When she was commuting on the train, she would play with weave structures on her laptop computer.
In your own art, what techniques have you focused on? Can you describe some of your pieces?
I like to do more art pieces, although I certainly have done garments and wearables and other things, but I like to use devaray to burn out part of the fiber. I like it that it leaves a translucent area. And I also like the fact that when I have two or more fibers in a piece, I can use the appropriate dye to dye only one part of the fabric, one color, because, for instance, a polyester would not take a fiber reactive like Procyon MX dye. Polyester and MX have no affinity to each other, whereas the cotton portion would take the MX dye and then the polyester would not. I then would use dispersed dye on the polyester portion of the fabric. Typically, when I do my pieces, if they're flat, I mount them on fiberglass window screening because then I can shine light through the screening as well as through the wall hanging and cast shadows on the wall. Or if I'm doing a sculptural piece, because polyester has what are called thermoplastic properties, I can permanently pleat the polyester and then create three-dimensional art pieces.
What are you trying to say with your pieces?
I like to show people that a textile can be an art object. There's this great divide between fine art and craft, and that is such an old argument. But when we look at the fact that a painter is usually applying paint to a canvas, they are dealing with fabric, but they never look at it that way. I think more and more the lines are becoming blurred between what is fine art and what is craft, and many people that used to be considered painters are now actually doing things that are more craft in nature by building up layers and collaging and assemblaging pieces.
Assemblaging? I've never heard that before. What is assemblaging?
Well, assemblage would be bringing together diverse elements. Collage came from papier collé, which was papers. But now assemblage goes beyond that. And most people today also, when they say collage, they're not just talking about paper. A lot of collage artists are using all kinds of things. I mean, fabric, they might be using beading, embellishments. Assemblage is bringing together very different elements.
Could you describe one of your art pieces?
I think I'll choose one called The Path of Travel. It uses my footprints, and travel is something that I'm very passionate about. I have traveled to many places in the world. So I decided to do this piece, and I wanted to use my own footprints. I decided that I needed to ink the bottom of my feet. What I did then is I printed two pieces of paper with my black footprint, and then I made a screen. This particular weaving is a structural burnout. It is a H-shaft crepe to a twill weave. I use the screen to burn out and also dye my footprints, and then I also transfer printed my footprints with dispersed dye onto the fabric also.
That's very cool that you actually used your own footprint as part of the art piece.
I have used my same footprints, but I've reduced them on the copy machine, so I've made other screens from my footprints. And actually last year I did a piece that was some hand-woven plain weave, and I burnt out my little footprints on that one, and then I stitched around it so it's as though I'm in the sand and water and there are ripples around my feet.
Dvore is such an interesting process in that you spend all this time making cloth and then you willfully destroy part of it. Is that part of what feeds your creative process?
Oh, I never think about it as really devouring, which is what the French word means, but I think of it more as adding to the piece because I'm visually changing it. To me, it's not a destruction. It's more of adding another facet to the piece.
That brings up another thing I'm very interested in. In your workshop and in your work, you use many different techniques and many different designs in the same piece. How do you know when to stop?
Usually I do think through a piece as much as possible because I have to know, well, if I'm weaving it, what the weave structure is and the different types of dyes I'm going to use. Sometimes where I think I'm going to stop, I don't stop because I look at that piece and realize that more has to be done to it. As with most artists, we're always evaluating and reevaluating what we're doing. Part of life, though, is learning when to stop.
Have you ever pushed a piece too far?
Oh, sure. There are always destructed pieces in the bottom of a closet or they were at some yard sale or something. Oh, sure.
It's very interesting, the process you've described. It sounds like you have a vision of where you want the piece to go, and then you reverse engineer the steps that you need to layer to make that happen. Is that?
Yes, that's true. I try to do that. But then there are often things that happen that are unexpected, and then one has to rethink the process and where the piece is going. And also, sometimes I have a vision of what I think the piece should look like, and along the way, it is nothing at all what the way I think it should look or the way I envisioned it. So then maybe I'll stop working on a piece for a while, or I'll hang it up where I can lay in bed and look at it in the morning when I get up and reevaluate the piece. And I have some pieces that have been laying around for years. Then I'll pick them up and I look at them with new eyes and continue on with that piece.
Where have your pieces been shown?
I've had one person show. I have exhibited at various galleries through my career. I've exhibited at convergences and different conferences. But most of my living has been made from teaching. I have not felt pressured to necessarily sell my artwork and make a living doing that.
In class, you read to us from a book, Art and Fear.
Yes.
It was such a cool thing to be working and having you read to us. Where did the idea for that come from?
I read that book when I was teaching at Penland. And it was just something I took along with me to read during my 2 weeks there. It was so inspiring to me that I felt I needed to share it when I teach with other students. And since then, I've learned some of my friends that have been in graduate school have now had it as required reading. So I think it's a very good book because it talks about how artists have many fears, that they're not going to make things properly. And, you know, we have to look within ourselves because often we are our worst critics. And I know I am very, very critical of myself. For me, I guess it's also a personal book to read and be inspired by.
Do you think that artists live along this catastrophe curve and that they have to constantly be judging their work, like you talked about, to decide if it needs more, but then you can go too far in the judging?
Oh, sure. Well, that's the type of person I am. I am very critical and always looking with a critical eye. I think there are some people that are much more slapdash and hope it comes out. Maybe they discard way, way more. I think weavers tend to discard less than maybe a painter would because it takes us longer to make the fabric.
Yeah, you can't just gesso over a bad warp.
That's right.
Bhakti Zeke gave me one of my favorite quotes from the book, Art and Fear. They were doing a study of artists, and with one group, they told them that they would be graded on the quality of work, and in the other group, they told them they would be graded on the quantity. And they found that all of the good art that was produced during that class was in the quantity section, which I thought was very interesting.
That's very interesting.
It's really been influencing how I think about my own work and even audio editing. Mm-hmm. You know, just do more and the good stuff will come.
Well, I think that that is very important for an artist to just keep cranking out things. And I know for me personally, it's much better to just keep making things and making things. Often we're told that it's not the first thing that you make that is the best. It's the 1,000th thing you make or the 100th or whatever. But yeah, you have to just keep generating things. And it's more than technique. It's using your eye and creating.
Right. Because when you're in your generative phase, you not only can learn from happy accidents, but you learn from your materials and it can focus you in a way that sitting down and thinking about it theoretically can't.
Right. Well, last summer, I did 80 pieces of fabric in 3 days. Now, this was surface design, but I now have those 80 pieces of fabric, and I've started to take out other pieces of commercial and also some fabric that I generated through a computer. And I'm looking at how I can bring these various elements together. You know, I've got this pile of 80 pieces of fabric, and so it's very interesting. I thought, okay, here, I have all this fabric. You know, I can cut it up and just use it however I want to.
So did you have a theme when you sat down to create 80 pieces of fabric?
They are all marbled with dispersed dyes.
We should talk about dispersed dyes. Could you describe what those are?
Dispersed dyes are dyes that work on what are called hydrophobic or water-repelling fibers. So this would be basically synthetics, polyester, acrylic, nylon. This is a fiber category that does not take fiber reactive dyes, acid dyes. Well, nylon will take some acid dyes. But anyway, most of these do not take those dyes. So dispersed dyes are used industrially. When they are used as an immersion or a solid color dye, then there are some very harsh chemicals that are used. So as a studio artist, they're usually used in a process called dye sublimation or dye transfer printing. And in this process, you paint the dye, and the dye is simply dye mixed with water and a little bit of detergent. You paint it on paper, and then you bring your fabric and the paper together, you iron it, and the dye goes as a gas from the paper into the fiber. These dyes are very, very long-lasting. They have a long shelf life, and they are very wash-fast, light-fast, and very bright colors.
I thought it was fascinating that finally there was a way to dye these materials that wouldn't die with any of the other things. Plus, it was such an easy process, the way you taught it in the workshop.
I call this process dying without a dye pot, because you need such a little amount of water. I think it appeals to people, especially in a drought situation, or if you don't want to have a facility that has water. You just have these dyes mixed up, and you might want to water them down a little bit, but they're so easy to use. They're so quick, and one piece of painted paper can be used many times. It's not as though you paint it once and,
right.
and that's the
and,
end.
And some of the results were just stunningly photorealistic.
Yes. If you stitch into the paper, you can see the ply of the yarn, or you can see all the individual fibers in a feather, and it's almost like you're looking at an x-ray.
Funny.
Or leaves.
One lady had left a pen in her thing, and she had a perfect photographic image of the. It looked like there was still a pen in the fabric.
Yes.
How long have you been teaching workshops at guilds?
Over 30 years. I taught at conferences more than going and teaching at guilds, basically because I had a full-time teaching job. So I would take a few days off to maybe go teach at a conference or teach in the summer. I did teach in the summer. But over 30 years, I've been teaching outside of the classroom.
So now that you're retired, are you a little bit more available for...
Yes, that's why I'm here in Tacoma. In fact, I had been invited previously by the Saddle Weavers Guild, and I told them, I'm sorry I can't come because I have a commitment, a job.
Well, how exciting for us that you've retired.
Yes. Well, last year I went to Australia. I had a wonderful experience there teaching at two different conferences and at a university also. That was wonderful.
So you are a busy lady. In addition to teaching and doing workshops and doing your own art, you also wrote this wonderful book that's got just tons of illustrations and techniques called The Surface Designer's Handbook. And the subtitle is Dyeing, Printing, Painting, and Creating Resists on Fabric. You published it with Interweave Press in 2006?
2006, that's right.
So how did this book come about?
This book came about when I was at a surface design conference, and Madeline Vanderhoot had been sent by Interweave Press to find some people to write some other textile books. She talked Catherine Ellis into writing her woven shibori book, and then she asked me if I would be interested in writing a book. Originally, I had planned that this book would only be for weavers, that it would be about dye techniques for weavers. But the book evolved and became a technique book on many, many different topics. So in this book, I tried to cover the basic types of dyes, fiber reactive, acid, vat, and disperse, and then many, many techniques that can be done with those dyes and embellishments and a lot of techniques. So the book is being used as a textbook in some universities, but I also wanted a book that any person that was interested in a technique could use that recipe. And then by looking at the photographs, they would get ideas, because it's not a book on how to do a certain type of weaving or a certain type of wall hanging, but there are a lot of photographs for stimulation.
So it's not a project-driven book. It's
right.
A toolbox.
Right. And I see this book as really the culmination of the things I learned about dyeing techniques. It's over 30-plus years of teaching and going to workshops and interacting with people and with my students. Some of the work in the book are pieces by former students. A lot of the work is by professionals. It's a real coming together of many, many people and many techniques.
One of the interesting things I've gotten out of this workshop is a real appreciation for surface design. Because I guess as a weaver, I'd always kind of had this snobbish view that, well, surface design is just, you know, putting pretty ink on the surface. And I didn't really think about how using techniques like Devore and combining different fibers, you could really build from the inside out and make
right.
it an integral part of the process. It's given me a whole new appreciation for surface design.
I see weaving and surface design as a melding together of techniques. By knowing both ends of the spectrum, you can create very unique pieces. Because as weavers, we can create our own fabric. And if you know surface design techniques, then you can bring them together and create wonderful new expressions.
It's also a great way to break out of the grid. If you don't have a jacquard loom and you want to do spirals,
yes,
you can just print them.
Yes.
You say that the book evolved as you wrote it. Can you still see the weaving underpinnings in the book? I mean, do you talk about weaving in the book?
I don't talk about weave structures, but there are definitely a lot of photographs that have handwoven pieces. And for instance, the piece that I described earlier, it says that that's a crepe weave burned out to a twill in the illustrations.
Now, if somebody wanted to see your work, do you have a website or a gallery?
I have a website, hollybrackman.com. Right now, I'm in a gallery in San Diego, Visions Gallery. I have some work there. They're Devereaux scarves that are permanently pleated.
You were also wearing a scarf that had like little bubbles.
Yes, that's one of the scarves that I'm selling currently at Visions Gallery. That was a commercial fabric that was Devereaux and also using dispersed dyes and then rayon. And so I created the scarves and dyed the rayon and then permanently pleated the bubbles. I call it my bubble scarf by tying marbles into the fabric. And then I put it in a pressure cooker to make sure that the pleats and the folds were permanently pleated.
One of the cool things I see in your work coming out of your knowledge of the dyes is that you often layer image upon image in such a way that there's one block of color that's intersected with another block of color, and the spot where they intersect creates a third color. So it's very translucent.
That's one of the things I like about Devereaux and using like a sheer fabric or an opaque fabric, bringing them together, yes, is creating that transparency and also letting the eye mix the colors rather than just putting on one solid color. If I wanted a green, I could have a yellow and a blue layer together and optically create that green.
I've made a major discovery this week. Polyester, once a hated fiber, is now one of my favorite fibers. When did you start using polyester in your work? I mean, there's such a focus on using natural fibers in the weaving community.
I think I started using polyester when I learned about dispersed dyes and the fact that those dyes have a relationship with polyester. And then I learned more and more about the qualities of polyester and the fact that it could be permanently pleated, because a lot of my weavings over many years have been all about three-dimensional pieces. I used to weave pieces I called three-dimensional forms from flat woven pieces. And so I've been intrigued by the architectural and three-dimensional quality of textiles. And once I figured out that I could permanently pleat polyester and it could be washed and those pleats would stay, I became enamored with polyester. I agree with you. Many people are so turned off by even the word polyester because they think of these horrible polyester double knit suits or something like that. But if polyester is used correctly, it has such a beauty, and you can use these dispersed dyes that are so easy to use. So there is a wonderful magical quality to polyester that a lot of people don't know about.
Yeah, you've got me looking at my stash and, you know, my cotton poly t-shirts in a whole new way. Dispersed dyes sound so easy to use. You just lay them on, heat set them, no water is even involved. Is there anything about them that's challenging?
Yes, the most challenging factor is that the dye, when you are using the dye sublimation or dye transfer process, the color of the dye when you put it on the paper is not at all the color that it will end up when it's transferred. For instance, you can have this very muddy looking yellow brown color, and when you transfer it, it can be a screaming yellow. What you see is not what you get. You learn, though, like in any other endeavor, you learn by doing, and you have to do some sampling. Sample, 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 right? Okay, so yes, what you see is not what you get.
We've talked about dispersed dyes and the fact that they're a transfer dye. Could you describe briefly how the process works?
The concentrated dye solution is made up by mixing dye, water, and a little bit of synthrapol. So you have containers of very concentrated dye, and then you can paint the dye on paper, and you let it dry on the paper, and then you put the paper, the painted paper, against the piece of fabric, and you iron it. Dry iron, then this dye sublimation process occurs as it moves from the paper into the fabric as a gas. The dye can also be thickened. If you want to have areas that you have done a monoprint, you can thicken the dye with a substance called monogum and then apply that to the paper and take an object and stroke through the dye, or you can do monoprints, various techniques, but it can be thin or thick.
What is next for you, busy woman?
In a couple weeks, I'm going to a textile conference in Peru. I'm looking forward to seeing indigenous weavers in Peru. And then I will be, after the first of the year, teaching some other workshops around the United States.
Very exciting. Thank you so much for coming and talking to us on the show.
Thank you, Sign.
Today's audio essay, my new favorite yarn, polyester? I confess, I have been having a strange flirtation with polyester. It started when I learned that polyester can be heat set. So if you, for example, weave woven shibori and then draw the strings to pleat the fabric and then put it in hot water or steam it, the polyester will retain the memory of its new shape. It actually kind of melts a little bit. Then after you take the strings off, it is permanently pleated, and you can even wash it, and it will stay permanently pleated. I've been playing around with that property of polyester, and I actually have gone out of my way to seek out 100% polyester 5/2 yarn, which is weird, because I am very much a natural fiber snob. At least up until this past week I was. So I had been playing around with heat setting, and then I fell into this workshop with Holly Brackman. I've been interested in Devoray for a while. I read Anne Field's wonderful book titled Devoray, which talks about how to do burnout using woven structures and all the interesting things you can do. But I hadn't ever actually tried it. In this class, we used a yarn that was a cotton-coated polyester. You can buy sewing thread or serger thread that is like this, but this was thicker. It's about the size of a 10-2 cotton, and it was called Coates T105. It's a little bit hard to find. If you find a good source for this on the internet, please let me know. I'm looking for more. But using this, we were able to weave fabric, and then we used the Devoray to burn away the cotton part and just left this translucent polyester behind. Now that was cool. Really cool. But there was more. The dispersed dye part of the workshop had happened before the Devoray part, and I didn't get to go to that, but the gear was still there, and the people who had been to that workshop were still using that technique, so I kind of picked things up around the edges. And one of the coolest things to do was you take a piece of paper and you paint it with the dispersed dye, then you put Japanese maple leaves on it, put that on a piece of polyester fabric, and put it in the heat press. Then you'll have a negative image of those Japanese leaves. But there will be dispersed dye on the Japanese leaves, which you can then take the Japanese leaves and lay them on a new piece of polyester, heat set it, and you'll get a photorealistic transfer. I mean, they were just stunning. And if you had painted the dispersed dye instead of in a solid color but with swirly colors, the print of the leaf looked like the colors of fall with all those different shadings of gold and red. And you got all the little veins and everything. It was just stunning. And so polyester is starting to tempt me greatly. I'm finding myself rustling through my stash of sewing thread, seeing what's cotton-covered polyester. Basically, when anybody in my family gets out of crafting, I get a big bag of stuff. So I have a lot of both 100% polyester thread and this cotton-covered polyester thread that I'm looking at in an entirely new light. And I know that there are issues with the way polyester and other synthetics are created. I know that they use petroleum and that that's bad. But you can do some really cool things with polyester. So there's this dichotomy. I've discovered some really cool new techniques. They use some kind of not friendly chemicals. And I'm trying to think about, you know, how to treat the chemical waste from this, because I don't want to pollute the environment. I don't want to just throw these things down my septic tank. And of course, I'm wearing proper protective gear. When you do the burnout, you produce some acid gas that you don't want to be inhaling. So there are some technical challenges, there are some ethical concerns, but there is just the pure magic of using dispersed dyes and of doing burnout. The way that you can layer design upon design upon design, you can overlap Procyon MX dyes with polyester dyes with Devoray and create these really rich and gorgeous fabrics. One of the projects we did in the workshop was a woven shibori that used both dispersed dyes and burnout in the shibori to create just, you have to look at the pictures, which is why the second half of this audio essay is actually a blog post. If you go up to the WeaveZine site and look for the blog post, My New Favorite Yarn, Polyester, you will find pictures that I took during the workshop and a bit more description of what happened in the workshop and some images of my samples. It was an amazing time. If you ever get an opportunity to take a class with Holly Brackman, don't worry if it's a surface design class. The woman is a weaver and there is weaving content inside. And as we talked about in the interview, surface design isn't just happening at the surface level. You can construct a fabric specifically for certain surface design techniques, so they really work hand in hand. You construct the fabric from the ground up in order to play nicely with the techniques you want to use later. And it's just added this extra layer of design potential and complexity. And since I've had that class, my mind is just roiling with all kinds of projects I want to work on. I've got some very cool ideas. I wish there were about three of me. So that's what I've been up to. It's given me a whole new appreciation for synthetic fibers. Holly Brackman is a wonderful teacher. Very inspiring. It was a great time. I ended up sitting at a table in the back with Mary and Dina and Tammy. And we decided that we were the bad girls table. We're kind of self-elected bad girls because we were in the back wisecracking and chewing gum and having a grand old time. I will admit I'm a bit of a workshop junkie. I love learning new things and I have a really hard time not signing up for workshops. And even if it's something that I am not specifically interested in, you almost always come away with some nugget of information that just changes how you do your art. And sometimes it's specifically the classes that you weren't that excited about taking because they're filled with the things you don't already know. I kind of tentatively encourage you to explore the possibilities of polyester. I say tentatively because I'm still struggling to overcome my natural fiber snobbery. But I gotta say, some of these things you can do with polyester, nylon, and acrylic are pretty darn cool. That's all for this episode, And now it's time to get warped. Because everyone knows you have to be warped to weave. I'm going to play you out with an appropriate song. This is Nylon Heat by John Gilliatt. Our musical guest this episode was John Gilliatt with his song Nylon Heat. It was provided through the Podsafe Music Network. Our sponsor this episode was Bonnie Tarsis, celebrating 50 years of weaving. Congratulations, Bonnie. Weavecast is brought to you through the generosity of our sponsors and donating listeners just like you. If you have the means and would like to support Weavecast through a financial contribution, you can do so on the Weavezine site. Simply go to Podcasts and then select Donate. Thank you for your support.